Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to, it's been a long time, Tragedy and Hope with my excellent co-host, friend, genius, Richard Grove. If you're not familiar with Richard and you're new to the show, I have lots of interviews with Richard in the archives. Be sure to check them all out. Richard, today is what, 12 years of you and I doing shows together?
I think technically it's tomorrow, but then if you take how the calendar changes over those years too. I think Memorial Day was a Monday back in 2006. How about that?
Right.
And you contacted me on Sunday. And I think, that's how
I remember. That was the holiday weekend, and I had gotten your, in those days, cassette tape on your work on 9/11, which everybody else ignored. And then, of course, it took them months to catch up, and everybody wanted you. But I remember I was so blown away by it, I had to work through the whole weekend to transcribe and put everything on the internet, and then my servers were burning like nobody's business for like 2 weeks after I posted it. That seems like a lifetime ago.
It was a lot of pages ago in my reading history, that's for sure.
Right.
I'd only pointed at the tip of the iceberg back then, and since then, like, I've been deep diving, like, what is this iceberg? How big is it? What information is there out there about it?
Right. But you know what? 9/11 gave us the world we're living in today. And then no one can ever convince me differently. That was their excuse for the police state we're living in now.
I would say it's a huge turning point in history that's all too undertaught everywhere. Schools, homes, businesses, on the media,
Oh, absolutely. Nobody wants to talk about it. People still say, why are you still bringing up 9/11? I'm like, look at the country, look at the world. And, nobody was held accountable for what happened that day.
Well, even just look at pop culture. Look at the movies in 97, 98, 99, 2000 versus what comes after 9/11. Right. There's a certain militarization and governmentization of a lot of mainstream, huge blockbuster movies that was very, soft. It was very much softer toward the late 90s. Right. And then all of a sudden it just gets amped up and it's like on steroids. I hate that euphemism, but it's like, government on steroids all of a sudden. Patriot Act, anything goes, mass surveillance, deleterious actions toward everyone's individual freedom in the name of illusory security from a never-ending bad guy search that eventually they catch him, but do they really catch him? And there's a lot of weak examples of evidence used to propel the official narrative, and that goes on to this day. That's why the country is so divided right now. That's why there's so many people just like in a state of angst and frustration, and it's not cool. Yeah, but it could be. Look at the end of the 90s. Everybody's getting along. There is no claims of racism and all that. I mean, I'm sure it was going on, right? It wasn't like systematized, and the reactions weren't highly predictable and emotional. You know what I'm saying? So now it's like being played out on a Wurlitzer organ. And, there's that famous quote, about the CIA, about how the Mighty Wurlitzer actually is a great book on this topic by Hugh Wilford. So the Wurlitzer was the intelligence and the deep state's ability to play the American population like a Wurlitzer organ, and they can make them jump to whatever tune. And that's what the CIA had bragged about back in the 50s and 60s about being able to do with American media. That's how closely tied. Now, you would think that maybe with the internet and everybody not being focused on one of four channels getting one of four messages all written by the same people, that people would have a more diverse opinion and, would have a broader, broader insight on the situation. But it seems even more myopic today. So the more media that's available, it still seems like 98% of that media is focused on divide and conquer and just like putting fuel on the fire and not offering solutions. So I think that's some of the frustrations that were around in 2006 and were around when you started and still are out there today.
Right. Well, it's crazy because you're right. After the 90s, look at the influx of post-apocalyptic movies we have, post-apocalyptic TV shows. And it's all, it's all violence, this and that. And when you look at social media, it's like there's only two sides. There's no in between. It's either white or black. There's no gray. You either have to take one side or the other. And people are willing to kill each other over the most mundane things. Well, they don't realize that Agenda 21 is on our necks.
Well, and it's not just Agenda 21, because all these – it's a finite planet. There's only so many people in concert working to take away your freedom and your property and your individual ability to live on this planet. And so all their plans are kind of interwoven. Agenda 21, definitely part of that. And that would be like a sub-aspect of technocracy as an overall using of technology between the rulers and the ruled. As a, for instance, 10 years from now, it'll be totally normal to have robots and drones and these type of things interacting between the slave populations or prison populations and the elite. This is kind of what they're pointing toward in that movie Elysium, right? The people that are out there are developing these super technologies, and that is to create a knowledge gap, a technology gap, a wealth gap, a power gap. They're all the same gap. And they're trying to put that gap between those few people with those super abilities and super access to resources and the rest of the individuals, right? And the meanwhile, while that's going on, they're like, hey, here's a bunch of stuff. You guys all fight amongst yourselves. Call it racism, right. Sexism, any ism. You guys can all fight about it. And they're like on their way to like building interstellar travel and stuff, you know?
Right.
Like, what are they doing with CERN? And is CERN more important than feeding people in this country? Like, I don't know how much of our money goes into CERN because it's an international project and you'd never be able to find out anyway. But let's just say there's billions of dollars tied up in that. Might we be better, you know, using that money to like educate people on how to be self-reliant or self-sufficient and making sure people are fed and not like, it, you know, at the edge of starvation or dying or homeless? Like, don't we have bigger right. problems to solve than whatever CERN is solving? And you can't even answer what CERN is solving. So right. there's a lot going on in the adult world out there, right? In like actual reality, things going on, as opposed to like the sub realities, which are like these narratives spun by mass media.
Exactly. Well, you know, you look at what went on with Roseanne, and when I looked at, you know, I don't have regular TV in my house, but when I was flipping channels at the gym, it was Roseanne 24/7, every station. And everybody's up in arms, you know, either some people say she, you know, they did the right thing. Some other people are saying it's freedom of speech. People are, you know, crying about Roseanne. But nobody's crying about the 1,500 kids missing on the border, or the fact we're locking up these kids and separating them from their parents in basically FEMA camps.
Right. Right. So I,
you know, so distraction. It's like distraction 24/7, you know, kill this person, kill that person. This one said this, this one said that. But there's so much being put into place for total fascism in this country that no one is paying attention to.
Yeah. I mean, so from my perspective, I only know about that because I know Roseanne used to have a show like in the 90s. I heard that she got a new show, and I heard some other people talking that she got fired. But I don't watch that type of TV. I don't expose myself to that. I try to focus on signal and less noise. So I don't know. Did she say something on Twitter? And if she did, that's her free speech. But the corporation that's paying her millions of dollars or whatever to have a show, they probably have a right also to, you know. So I don't know anything about the situation. All I know is that you're not going to get like the balanced perspective from usual channels, because they want to rally people on their side. And they're like, look, she got fired. That's great. Or that she got fired. That's wrong. Right. That's the only two flavors out there. And I think that a mature adult mind has to think about things and with more nuance and more context and less reaction of the emotional variety and more like cognitive processing. Like, why is this going on now? What is the reaction that's being sought from this? Because somebody's playing chess or somebody's playing Go, right, out there on the public, right? And people in the public, they're like thinking checkers. So like, oh, that he just jumped in, you know, he's kinged, right? No, that's not what's going on. It's a different game. And that's why you can't ever get that perspective through those type of channels, which is why you started doing what you did. And that inspired me that I was like, hey, I could publish on the internet too and get my perspective out there. And now it's like a super popular thing that people would record a podcast and put it out there and let other people find it and get educated from it. Like, that's one of the positive signs of how the internet can be used, you know, for freedom. But
absolutely.
it's not being well served. Neither are we by using it to like create drama and hate and like, you know, divide and conquer mentalities.
Well, but this is, as long as they keep us fighting amongst ourselves, we don't really pay attention to what they're doing. And, you know, when I do post the truth, I get banned. I mean, I actually got blocked on Facebook 3 times in 2 weeks. YouTube's already given me 2 strikes, and I don't even put anything intense on YouTube. But, you know, it doesn't stop me because, believe it or not, in July, I start my 19th year doing this show on the net. And I'm going to keep doing it until I can't. That's simple. But, you know, when you look at how they play everybody's emotions, one thing I learned a long time ago, and I want to say that it was when I was involved in a tough love group in New York. And one of the principles and things that I learned is if you want to change someone else's behavior, you have to change your reaction to it. And maybe it'll change. And they never gave you a guarantee. And I think people need to stop. And they have to say, I don't want to react to all this and become a psychotic and, you know, like a born again, because my feelings are hurt or I don't agree with them. You know, I can give it to you in a nutshell. Roseanne insulted one of the women that was in Obama's campaign. I think her name is Valerie Jarrett. And she wrote that she was a cross between, it was like the Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a child. And everybody went crazy. Not the Trump fans. The Trump fans are pissed that Roseanne lost her show, but the same Trump fans demonized Michelle Wolf at the Correspondents' Dinner because she made a remark about Sarah Huckabee Sanders' eyeshadow. So you see how ridiculous. And
sounds like high school. Not even a good high school.
It's worse than high school. And you know what? Trump is, he's livid this morning because the ABC didn't call him to say they were letting go of the Roseanne show. But when you look at it, every pundit, everybody's talking about the fact that why fire her when Trump still has his job, when he has said a whole lot worse racist remark. So this is what's happening in a nutshell.
All right. So if I can salvage that into something we can all learn, I would say it's a study of power. Roseanne wanted to have the power of people's attention on her tweet. She got that in a way she didn't really intend. Now she's a subject of talk. And while, you know, any publicity is supposedly good publicity, this probably isn't working out how she thought, because how she thought might have been, you got Trump making these crazy tweets. She could do something similar, but Trump is protected by power. And obviously, whoever she insulted, they're protected by power too, or someone with power just didn't like that person getting picked on, and then they make a phone call. And so I think that's a good lesson. That's a good lesson for everyone else to learn. I don't know what Rosie's learning from it. You know, I don't know either.
This morning she posted a tweet saying that she made that tweet while she was on Ambien. So the makers of Ambien already wrote a tweet saying that racism is not a side effect of Ambien. And the beat goes on. I mean, listen, when I changed the name of my new show to News with the Planet of the Apes, I didn't know how real it was going to become. And I think this is also going to backfire on Trump. I think that she did him a very big disservice with that tweet, because everybody's talking about how much worse what he says is than what she did.
Right.
So, you know, I sit back and watch the circus, you know what I mean? It's like a circus. I've never seen anything like this in all the years of living in this country, let alone doing my show.
But it's all been building toward what's going on. It's all been building, you know, it's been a slow rise and ripple over the ocean, but now you're seeing it, like, you know, rise up and hit the shore.
Well, they obviously want, you know, when I look at this, I'm like, okay, what's the agenda here? And to me, it really looks like, you know, how many people have been saying we're going to have a civil war. A lot of the alt-right is saying if Trump gets indicted, we're going to have a civil war. You know, progressives, liberals, you better, you know, we got our guns coming for you. I mean, is this what they want? Do they want a civil war? Do they want race wars like we had in the 1960s?
Okay. Here's the big picture. There are those who want civil war. And they're not on either side. Okay? Like the Civil War in the 1800s wasn't legitimately North versus South. There was like some tertiary players. Let's call them proto-globalists, people who had a bigger idea than just preservation of America. They might have wanted to put together like a whole bunch of nations back then and move forward, right? So there's certain actors and players who participate in the American Civil War from 1861 to 65 by funding some sides, cutting off funding for others, providing, you know, safe transit for certain people, right? So there's this like overstructure from the historical Civil War. Now, if we look at it today and like, if you just like, if fighting breaks out, people are like, oh, this group attacked this other group. No. There's a bigger group that has been planning to take down America for a long time, and they've been systematically doing it, and they've dumbed down the population, and that's not any individual's fault. It's a function of the school system and the media system that did this on purpose. It takes away certain faculties or components of reason and logic and history and context that you need to make informed decisions. We are then dependent on the media infrastructure, right, which becomes very much stimulus reaction. So now they've got the population to a point where they can just say some words and show some pictures on TV and people go outside and start fighting. That's pretty crazy. It's a total practical application of technology. Call it technocracy as a plan, but it's using technology and media to stimulate human activity. That's like mind control, right? On a broad basis, like you might see in what's that movie, The Kingsman, or, you know, all these other dastardly dudes in these bad movies like the James Bond villains who are trying to take over the world. They develop things like this. Guess what? That's not just fiction. There's a group of people on this planet who, for whom the goal is to take away everyone's individual liberty and then your ability to move and act freely. That's control. So part of that control is making everybody in this country fight with each other as they try to stir up or spark off an artificial civil war. Because when you get down to it, people who call themselves liberals or people who call themselves conservatives or Republicans or Democrats, they're pretty much a little liberal and conservative in their own choices through life. So really, they've got us all thinking that we're one thing or another. And some of us have said, hey, maybe I'm something else. I'm going to step away from that dichotomy of thinking, right? Because it seems like a trap. And that seems like that trap of divisiveness can be used to put like American freedom and liberty in a vice. And as it ramps up, they take away more and more freedom and liberty. Guess what? They just took away our freedom and liberty. They just put everyone in this country like at war with each other. And while we're all fighting and trying to figure out what's going on, they just took what all these people have fought and died for in American wars for 240 years, right? 1776 till now, something like that. You've got all these people who fought and died to progress liberty and freedom to this point, and it's all going to be taken away in a very, very short period of time because there are players out there and they are playing a higher level game, and they've got people en masse like divided thinking about this small checkers game that's not even really going on. So that's kind of how I see it. It's a very well organized plan. There's a lot of data and evidence that totally supports it. It's going on. You can look out your window. You can look on your TV. It's going on. You can see it progressing every day. And it's deleterious to everything that, like, ideally America was supposed to be. It was never a perfect country. But at the time when America was created, it was the most free place on the planet. It's the first place that actually wrote it down and said, hey, we're going to try to do these things. And then over years, improved the system. I don't agree with, like, you know, the genocide of the Native Americans or the slave trade or any of that, right? But I was just born in 1973. I got here while this whole thing was going on, just like most everybody else, right? So I'm just trying to deal with what is going on today. What do I have the influence to be able to control within my own life? And then there's these bigger things like Trump. I have no control over him, so I don't worry too much about him. And the whole thing with politics and Fox and CNN and MSNBC, I found a so much better use for my time in a multitude of ways. But you can't discover that while you're still watching like the pageantry and the theater that they put out every day. And they spend billions of dollars and they cross coordinate. Like, all those people are working together with, you know, with each other behind the scenes. It's not as like random as they make it seem.
Right. Well, you could tell just by the stories they're all covering, and they cover the same one story like for days. And I'm like, what? There's no other news after I just did like a, you know, speed talk, an hour and a half of real news on my show.
Right.
And this is what they're talking about. But, you know, you look at the police state, and I think about Dave McGowan. You know, when I first met Dave, he had sent me his book. God, it was so many years ago. Understanding the F Word, which is about fascism in America. And of course, at that time, he wasn't popular because everybody thought it was a joke. You know, fascism would never come to America. Well, that was only 18 years ago. And when you look at what America's become and the lack of freedom, you know, I often tell people, what are you celebrating? You know, the freedoms we don't have, the police state we live in, the self-surveillance. I mean, people are self-surveilling themselves. I mean, I can't get over that. You know, I'm sure you saw the latest with these Alexa things that people have in their house. And one of the stories I recently heard was Alexa had recorded a conversation going on in this couple's house and emailed it or sent it to somebody on their mailing list. And when their friend called and said, your whole conversation just got sent to me, you need to shut off your Alexa and all those gadgets, they thought she was kidding. And she said, you were both talking about hardwood floors. And that's when they realized that that had happened. Now, in the, you know, in the name of convenience, I mean, how hard is it to get up and put a light on in a room where you need to have an Alexa, oh, Alexa, put the light on? I mean, how lazy have we gotten? But people are now willingly surveilling themselves and paying for it.
And it's adapting their behavior. But exactly. We could talk about that in a second, because the Alexa problem is interesting enough, right? Alexa, Siri, all that stuff. They're using that, first off, they need massive amounts of data to train artificial intelligence. So they're going to suck everyone's data. And then the government's like, oh by the way, that's what the corporate need is. The government's need is to suck off a bunch of data so they know what, who, what, where, when, all this stuff, and map everyone and predict their ability and pre-crime and all this stuff, right? So that's where the two agendas combine. That's the fascism. That's the corporations and the government, which become indistinguishable. And that's what Mussolini defined fascism as, right? So right. That's there. So if you don't like fascism, or you don't like the government having like overarching control over your life, like Big Brother in 1984, then you need to understand the limitations of what you need out of a device before it becomes deleterious to your freedom. For instance, like I have a lot of technology. I'm not a Luddite. But I also don't own an Alexa, right? Or whatever that, Echo, all that stuff, right? I don't use Siri. I might speak in a text message, and I know that the phone or whatever, it's got 6 microphones, it's listening all the time, whatever. I act accordingly because I know that. If you don't know that and you don't realize that, right? So I adapt my behavior, but I try to adapt it for freedom. Some people adapt their behavior and say, oh, I don't care. I have got nothing to hide. Okay. If we live in a society where people can be right, if we live in a society where people have been convinced that there's no value to freedom, then Memorial Day really is like anachronistic for this time then, right? It doesn't fit back. It doesn't fit into the timeline because people bled. A lot of people bled. And these wars, hey, here's a bad pun. They're trumped up. They're organized. There are other people like. The only reason we were in World War I or World War II is very different than anybody knows, unless you read into the books and the history and the records and actually see for yourself. And not too many people do that, but you do interview a lot of people who talk about that sort of thing. So you might get exposed to it on alternative media outlets such as Maria Heller Show, right? So there's this reality going on, but like the mainstream media, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, etc., that's the fence. And if you don't climb that fence and actually go out and see what's out there and collect your own evidence and answer your own questions, you're not even going to have like a decent chance of trying to understand it. You'll never understand given the pieces they give you because the pieces don't fit together and they're missing pieces to the puzzle. So if you go out and say like, you know, what's the evidence about America getting into World War II? Just ask Amazon. You could do that or a book, you know, American Book Exchange. Type in World War II or World War I. Oh, here's a book about how the British Empire was trying to get America into the war because they were already in the war, the British. They wanted the Americans to come in. In either case, right, there's a lot of skullduggery that goes on to get that, but we're not taught about that. And I think if it was right and it was just and it was had to do with freedom, it should be taught then. That's why they did it, right? Or if they were doing it to take away our freedom, then that would be a really good reason not to teach us about it, to hide those facts, to try to just gloss it over and make everybody say, you know, Trump's a racist or Antifa's evil or whatever, man. Like that's not leading anybody that I know to have a better life. And we only have one life to live, and like this stuff's going on, but you can choose not to tune into the noise and you can choose to tune into the signal. But unfortunately, we, the signal, are hard to find sometimes, right?
Well, and then
not for your listeners or my listeners, but.
Well, they make it harder to find us by striking people off Google, striking people off YouTube, striking people off, you know, the big social media outlets. And I see that with myself. So what happens is, and you're right, after the third strike in 2 weeks on Facebook, I didn't want to lose my connection to Facebook because it gives me the pulse of America, which I need to know for my show. I use it as data information for myself. But I realized I can't use the word Nazi or say anything too strong about the Jews or Zionists because that's like words that will keep get me kicked off.
So and why is that? Why is that? Like it used to be that freedom of speech was for people whose views we didn't want to hear and they had the right to say them anyway, right? It wasn't for the people that we agree with. It was like that guy is espousing an idea that totally is abhorrent to me. As long as he's not taking away anyone else's freedom, he's free to speak the words, right?
Right. But there was
and then we're free to ignore or not listen or protest or whatever, right?
Listen, I found myself where I would normally want to make a comment on something, but I realized all the hate and threats I'm going to get if I do to just not even bother. You know,
well, that,
it's like, why should I bother? Why do I need to draw that shit to myself?
Okay, so that gets down to... where is your input of energy most effective? Like, are you, if you're getting like, you know, people, they go to have arguments on Facebook or Twitter or whatever. First off, is the person you're arguing with actually somebody who's willing to think about their position and intake this information that you're trying to give them? You're like, oh, here's all these links or whatever. Like sometimes, like first off, it's not even worth the encounter because the person's not there to learn. Even if you are, they're not offering you any knowledge. They're just there for drama, right? So that becomes like a total waste of time, but people get like emotionally caught up into that. And it's like, no, I'm going to change what I'm doing today and put all this good work aside. And let me focus on something where there's no way I'm going to change that person's mind in this thread. Right?
Exactly.
So reverse engineer from success. Can you have a successful communication where it's like win-win instead of win-lose? And if you can't, then maybe you should work on some of your win-win stuff.
Seven Habits of Highly Effective People.
That's just basic civilization 101. Like, so first, let me just draw it out like this, because people are like, you know, there's all this politics going on, and we're seeing a loss in our freedom. There's all these things are connected, but we're not taught how they connect, right? So when you're if you were living by yourself in the wilderness, things like rights and like politics, they don't exist because they only exist around other people. But if you want to live with other people in civilization, there are certain rules that it's like pretty cool to live by and everyone gets along and that's great, right? So politics are where individuals are like representing their views and their perspectives, and then that all goes together, and like the Greeks, you know, were voting and they would vote on stuff. And these type of ideas that we still experience today, elections, have been going on for thousands of years, along with the evolution of personal and individual freedom, right? So politics led people to have philosophies, like a method or some sort of tactic or strategy to come upon truth, right? Because truth then connects to freedom. In a civilization where you're losing truth, you will also lose freedom. There's a direct correlation between those two. So if you see like, you know, free, it's like your boat. If you see the boat sinking, there's probably water in it, right? So if you see freedom sinking, there's probably a lot of skullduggery and occulting of facts, hiding of useful information, and that makes the whole in the system that makes everything float, right? So if we reverse engineer it back, it's like, okay, freedom is going down, truth is absent, we've lacked the philosophy to actually identify fact from fiction. That's part of the problem. That comes from like a hole in the school system. Or actually, that's the school system's purpose. That's the hole in the education system. And then that translates back to where we start with politics. How do we all interact with each other without people going to war all the time? Right? How can we meet our needs without denying somebody else having their needs met? How do we create a win-win situation instead of I'm going to bat you over the head with this club and take your stuff? Because that's how it worked before people had these rules. So that's another aspect. Before America, most places were already on lockdown, and they had these things called kings and queens, and you know, there were duchies and principalities, Roman Empire, Roman Catholic Empire, all this stuff. It was on lockdown. People came here, and the people that came here, the settlers, often got very well along with the Native Americans. It's only when you start getting governments and people coming over here like the British, this is where it first starts, because the French had a great relationship with, and actually intermarried with a lot of the tribes. The British came over and said, this is our property. It belongs to our king. It's no longer yours. And the Indians weren't down with that. And then you have like French and Indian War, and you have 1776 after that. This is where George Washington comes from, right? Fighting with the Indians. So there's all these other layers, and these go on today, right? We still have these same problems. We haven't outgrown these problems because I think we failed to learn the applicable history and the context that would allow us to actually resolve these problems. So I don't expect to wake up tomorrow and everything's going to be, you know, peachy keen and Jim Dandy.
Wow, we both said peachy keen at the same right. time. That's weird. Rich, we need to take a short break. Stay with us, Richard, and I'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to Tragedy and Hope with my co-host and friend, Richard Grove. For people listening to the show at Gary Knowles Network, come over and subscribe to the show. Support Richard's work as well. Get over to tragedyandhope.com. There are educated people actually giving you the truth. We need your support because we're not going to get that from the powers that be as they continue to try to wipe us off the face of the earth as far as social media goes. Speaking about social media, Rich, and I know you're always into your studies and you're working on a fabulous project right now. Have you seen that China has already implemented a social credit system?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I saw that a couple. I think it came out maybe 2013.
Well, now, this supposedly, from what I reported the other day on the show, I think 5,000 people were prevented from flying, and there was some other statistics. So, in other words, it's exactly like that show Black Mirror, where everything is going to come down to your media rating, you know, whether it's social media rating or not. And when people look at China here in the United States, they get all mad and disgusted and say, how could they do that, without realizing that's going to happen here too.
Well, first off, I would say that's predictive programming. And Charlie Brooker, who was instrumental in creating Black Mirror, he had several outspoken series that I thought were, you know, pretty inspirational. Not exactly that I agree with, but just from a production standpoint, he's an interesting character. And I just think that, like Mike Judge, who wrote Idiocracy, these guys see clearly where all this is going. And Black Mirror is just basically showing you. It's like, here's where this is going if you don't do anything about it. And I think people are just like, oh, that's okay. Because they don't have the comparison to what actual freedom and privacy and, like, you know, the ability. And I'm not saying in a technological world of modern age that everything's going to be totally private like it was in the 50s or the 30s right. or the 1800s, right? Because there was a lot of spying going on. You know, they were tapping telegraph lines during the Civil War, right? So they, right. You know, so there was always this, but it wasn't as easily or needlessly. This is the most important part. It is a needless mass surveillance that's going on. Like they told us after 9/11, this comes back to the earlier point, that 9/11 changed the world. And I use it as a keyhole through which you can study a larger and broader context of history than you're going to see on this side of the, you know, the official story side of it. Right. But that allowed Patriot Act and all these other surveillance acts to go through because they had to catch the terrorists. But in reality, they only wanted to catch everybody else. They wanted your data. They took it. They got it. They continue to get it. They got this huge NSA data center in Utah. Guess what? That's not for catching the terrorists. That's for surveilling our own citizens. Something that would make all the founding fathers, whether they own slaves or not, roll in their grave. Right? So the ideas of the creation of America, where they wanted to be free from a monarchical system that turned into the British Empire, that then said, we want to take America back under our clutches. And then they went about progressing it so far as, I can't believe I'm going to mention it, the royal wedding, where now America and Britain are again joined at the hip. And, you know, like, I have political cartoons of America and Britain shaking hands across the sea, and it's like blood is thicker than water, and we're friends again, back, like, to get us into World War I and World War II. So I just see this again today as, like, look, These are the people who took away people's guns. They blew up all the armaments and cannons, and this is how the Revolutionary War started in 1776. The British Empire wanted to disarm the colonial individuals of the colonies that would become the first Americans, and that's how the war started. So having somebody like Oliver North in charge of the National Rifle Association, I don't see that as a good thing, because the man was involved, and he's not the kingpin by any stretch of the imagination. He's the fall guy, but he did a good pratfall. Like, he, you know, tumbled and came right up out of it, and he's got millions of dollars on Fox News, right? Now he's in charge of the NRA. If anyone ever dreamed, if George Soros had a wish list, he's like, take down the NRA, and somebody said, well, George, how are you going to do that? He's like, well, I'll get Oliver North in there. I'm not saying Soros did it. I'm just saying, if you think of the masterminds of globalism that just don't care about America at all and would like to just see it burn and become rubble so that they can, you know, sell off the parts and move everything to China and colonize the next population. Because that's what's going on, right? There's a big wealth and power transition to India and China, and that's been built up over the past 40, 50, 60 years since World War II.
So why do you think the powers that be would put Trump in the suit this particular time and allow him to do and say the things he does? Would it also fit in that this is part of their plan to destroy our country from the inside out?
Absolutely. They have him like he's a rodeo clown. You can't take your eyes off him. When's the bull going to hit him? And, if you put Hillary in, because this is how the decision's made at the highest level, right? They got analysts and they got their bean counters and they're sitting at a table. If you put Hillary in, what happens? The Watson AI computer spits out this. All these NRA Trump supporting people are going to feel disenfranchised, and they've got a lot of energy right now. Oh, well, right. What if Trump wins? Well, all those people stand down and sit down and watch their TVs and argue on social media instead of actually, you know, doing anything socially, actively, whatever. You'll have total control of them. Well, what happens to Hillary's group of people? Oh, they get super energy and they get to, you know, go out and do X, Y, and Z and, you know, claim they're disenfranchised, but they're out there marching and protesting where the conservative Trump people, they're not going to do that, right? So, like, they run it through and they're like, okay, we keep everybody glued to their magazines, their TV. This is great for media. We're going to have Trump storm. He's great for publicity. And in the meanwhile, they're like, you know, checking off their last boxes of how do they get globalism in like a world slave state. Because that's what the New World Order is. And you can read Kissinger's book on World Order. You can read Marianne Slaughter from Princeton, her book, The New World Order. Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of books written by them. This is not my term. I was not a conspiracy theorist before I bumped into these things. But after you look at the evidence available and you get beyond like the cliche, you know, stuff you see on the internet, once you actually read it in their own words that they have a plan and they want to bring America back into that plan and then basically dismantle America in that process and then, you know, have a global government that lasts forever, and freedom is like a myth that's like spoken in hushed tones when you're in the, you know, in a place that can't be surveilled by robots or drones.
Right. Well, you see the uptick in police brutality and murders by police for traffic tickets now. And people seem to just, you know, it could happen in a huge crowd and everybody just stands around and watch it happen. No one's defending their fellow citizens.
Oh, they break out their cell phone and film it. They're like, it's going to go from.
Exactly what happened.
Okay, and the social score from China is going to reward that, right? The social score would not reward somebody who tries to intervene and protect somebody from, you know, being beaten by some unruly authority, right? Social score is not going to like that. You might even be locked in your house. Your door might not open the next day. This is where they're going with it. It doesn't have to go there. But with so many people just being like, yeah, give me iPhone 13, please, you know, or whatever, right?
People still get shocked when they ask for my cell phone number and I tell them I don't have one.
All right. But on the other hand, let's not even think about those people, because those people aren't in the percentage of people who are ever going to make any type of action happen in history. Your audience and my audience, they're probably working right now. They're doing something. They're driving. They're mowing their lawn. They're doing their garden. They're at the gym. Right. They're trying to learn their way out of this. So the first thing is you got to learn how to recognize the people who are unconscious and aren't putting any thought, and they run their life on total stimulus reaction. Slowly step away. Nothing you're going to say right now is probably going to change their behavior. They're going to have to go through that experience on their own. And you're probably best suited on just focusing on, what do I need to learn to be able to survive and thrive in this world and know that this stuff's going to go on, all this globalism, that's going to continue to go on. But how can I create, you know, insulated bubble of freedom that I can work within amidst that while you're solving the long-term problems, right? Because people need to have a roof over their heads. Electricity is a good thing these days. Indoor plumbing, always nice, right? And I think also the school system fails us in trying to prepare us for a real world scenario where you're economically self-reliant unless you jump through the hoops and go to work for one of their approved corporations or government positions. Right. Because that's really who that's who this whole school system and college system's for. It's the trained workers for those companies. Right.
Well, now they're eliminating Native American studies in the textbooks. They're eliminating any information on the slave trade that happened in this country.
I have it on close information from a family member that the Civil War in certain parts of the country, at least, this is Connecticut. So the Civil War in Connecticut, they only teach about the North. Nothing is said about the South. Now, I'm not a fan of the South, but you can't really understand a war if you're not taught about both sides. And I have no fear whatsoever that when you look at it, you're going to be like, oh, slavery's wrong. It was okay to learn about that side because now I learned, you know, another instance where slavery's wrong. And as far as those monuments that they want to tear down, I think it might be a good idea. You might want to leave them up because you need to remind people there was a time in this country when some people could be owned by other people. And that was a horrific time. And we're really glad we're kind of past that, but it still goes on in the undercurrent today that no one talks about. But it's not like socially acceptable unless like you're Apple or somebody like that, then it's cool. But like there's this history that needs to be taught. And I don't think that there's any sort of empowerment over teaching just one side. Like, you know, those guys were bad and we beat them and that was it. No, it's like, no, they held other people against their will in chains and totally controlled every aspect of their lives. It was bad. But you know what? Since that's the type of thing that's still going on today, only instead of just against one race, it's kind of being done against a bunch of different people, like across the board. It might be a good thing so you can recognize that pattern. So this is another reason they would take it out of the education, right? It's, you know, it's going on out there, but you don't have to get sucked in by it. But it's good to know about it.
Right. And people don't have to spend their whole day doing that. That's what I do for them. So all they have to do is listen to my show a couple of times a week and get on with their lives. You know, when I studied years ago with Sun Bear, who was, you know, he was a great teacher, he had predicted that one day we would see the fall of all the isms. And you know what? I don't doubt that. And I think that capitalism's gone mad in this country because only the rich benefited, especially from this tax giveaway, which cut more social programs. It's almost like they want a war. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're pushing people to the point of no return. Because I never heard the expression as many times as I hear it the past 2 years of deaths of despair in America. You see it in India, too, where the farmers are committing suicide. The opioid crisis. People just give up. They just want to give up.
All right. So you got a lot to unpack there. I'm going to hit the opioid crisis last. But okay. if you look at the ticker tape of history here, all this stuff's been going on and on and on. And like all these groups like try to raise money and they're going to fight starvation or they're going to fight hunger. It's like, no, that's not the reason. That's not the reason. It's like there should be limitations to capitalism. It should be the limitations, same limitations individuals have. If you're going to give a corporation the rights of an individual person, then it has to have the same limitations as far as freedom and slavery. And I think those are not isms that we all need to focus on instead of communism, fascism, socialism, capitalism, free. You know, it should be like Democrat, Republican, all that stuff. It should just be like freedom or not freedom, right? You have the freedom to have an iPhone. But Apple doesn't necessarily have the freedom to like use slaves and like, you know, torture people basically to get it to your hands, right? Like they're trying to serve a market. You shouldn't go that far to serve your market if that's the effect on the other end, right? But like there's no consciousness or conscientiousness in like the manifest for a corporation's activities. But it could be in there, but they won't really voluntarily put it in there. And then is it right to make laws? Well, there's laws on the books already. We got too many laws. You can't even read them all. So what's the harm in, you know, trying to clean up things like that, right? But these are not popular strategies because they don't lead to more money. On the other hand, the other topic you mentioned, all, you know, ongoing wars and aggression and fighting, that's all very profitable. Drama's very profitable, but war, all very, very profitable. And you'll find that the people that call themselves globalists, or, you know, however you want to phrase them, they're very, very close to the arms trade and the proliferation of threat and fear, and here's a whole bunch of equipment to do that, but now it's outdated, buy the new stuff from us. You know, there's a lot of that going on. Billions and billions and trillions of, you know, dollars. United States, United Kingdom, Russia, three of the biggest countries that deal in that, and they basically make sure everyone else has enough arms to, like, face off against each other and destroy the world, right? So,
well, this war on terror supposedly has cost $5 to $6 trillion so far. What have they done except create more terror?
I'm sure we couldn't have done anything better with that, and that the government spends our money better than we do.
Yeah, right.
But to the opioid crisis, this also, very, very long history, not really something that popped out of America. Like, we don't grow opium and stuff here. I mean, I guess if it's done, it's done on a small scale. But our good friend British Empire, they happen to have a worldwide monopoly on opium back at the time of the Revolutionary War and through the 1800s, and then kind of got handed off from MI6 to CIA in the 20th century. So that's why we're in Afghanistan, because the British had already been in Afghanistan for 3 wars. And now Afghanistan's the longest running war in American history, right? So you got 2 things. You got the opium on the black market, and then you got the pharmaceutical companies getting, you know, their quality pharmaceutical grade stuff, right? And this goes on. This is why the government and certain intelligence agencies deal with cartels and keep it illegal so they can, you know, insulate their prices. I don't think that's very capitalistic. Right. And when they have to claim national security all the time, ding, 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 why you got to hide it if it's right? Like, if you're what you're doing is so straightforward and all the American people would agree. No, like, national security came in 1947 with Clark Clifford, who wrote that act, who was later indicted for being involved with BCCI, which was the biggest money laundering bank, working with the CIA and Iran-Contra and MI6. So, summarize the story. The guy who wrote the National Security Act later was involved in big time drug money trafficking and laundering.
Not surprising. I mean, when you go back to the UK in history and the East India Tea Company.
There you go.
The wars with China, and then bringing the opioids into China and addicting the Chinese to be able to control them.
On purpose. And then that's called the century of humiliation. That's how the Chinese refer to it, right? Got to read both sides of the history, because the British are like, oh, it was okay, they bought it. So long story short on that, I don't know how much time we have, but here's how it works. 1600s, Europeans discover tea. China won't trade with Europe, but they'll take silver and gold. They think all the European crafts are not quality. And so silk, tea come from China. The Europeans discover that they're all out of silver and gold. How do we get it back? The British are like, hey, we can get these people addicted to opium, and over a century, we can get all our stuff back and more. And then they totally colonize China. And then they bring Mao in, David Rockefeller. And he says it's one of his greatest accomplishments in his life to put Mao in charge of the genocide and democide in China. And that's what is now, like, becoming this other appendage to America through trade, that was fully designed by the Anglo-American establishment. So, like I said, you know, it's a finite planet, whether it's spherical or flat or however you see it. It's a finite planet, only so many people trying to do this. And there's a long and, like, very fascinating history. It wouldn't be so fascinating if it was, like, you know, actually taking away our freedom in a fictional way. But since it's actually taking away our freedom, you got to study it. You got to, you know, there's a fascinating aspect. There's a practical aspect. They have a plan. There is a they have very much their needs, their daily needs are very much different than all of ours. What their concerns are, what they think about, very much different than the rest of us who are just trying to, like, oh, today's garbage day, I gotta take garbage out, right? That type of thing, right? They're seeing things on a grand scale. They are planning for other people's lives. They are conservative, they are liberal, right? It could be Soros or, you know, the Koch brothers. They're all doing it on purpose. They see themselves more alike than they see with us. Right. So it's like they are closer together. We're like on the outside of the wheel. They're like in the hub of the wheel. Right.
Well,
so they try to keep us all apart.
Right. Well, and they seem to be doing it very successfully.
They use spin. They use centripetal force. It's all physics. They're spinning us apart.
Right, but I do want to bring up, because you really reminded me when we were talking about China and this, that's the beginning of the book, Drugs as Weapons Against Us, which is a great book. For whatever reason, I can't think of the author's name right this second. But I had him on the show a couple of times, and it's a book everybody should read. You know, I even lent it to my, you know, regular friends that try to stay, you know, a little bit informed. You know, I always pass those books around, and they were astonished. So everybody should read that book. You know, I've got interviews here. God, I don't know. I got to look up his name because it's really bothering me. but I don't know if you've read it.
I haven't, but I have about 10 or 15 books on the history of opium.
That's who it was. It was John Potash. John Potash. Potash.
Okay. Yeah, I do know his name. I have a bunch of books on the history of opium trading and the East India Company and CIA and MI6 and all that stuff, because it's part of my Truth About the Rothschilds book project. And the question was, did the Rothschilds participate in this enormous opium empire that was the British Empire? And if so, how did they play a role? This sort of thing. So I had to read through a bunch of different books. That in and of itself could be its own book, but it's not going to be, because there's a whole bunch of other stuff. So while my book might be two volumes, it's my hope to create like a coherent timeline, and not from a like an accusatory perspective, just saying, look, this is fascinating history that I think everybody should be aware of. And it really gives you shines a light on how the world works and how our country was developed and how other countries in Europe were developed, how a lot of, you know, big bridges and dams and mines and railroads and subway systems, all these things came about through their projects, right? So I just think it's fascinating, and that people should have the opportunity to learn about it. And part of that is the story of the East India Company and the opium, and Nathan Rothschild getting money from the East India Company to beat Napoleon. There's a lot. That's why I'm writing. That's why I'm writing a book, because it's very, very fascinating.
I can't wait.
Yeah, me neither. I can't wait to be done with that project either. That's a good one to check off my list. I'll be very happy. Audiobook will be coming up now. I'll release the audiobook. You'll just be able to listen to it.
Yay. When you look at the NFL and the flak going on over the protesters taking a knee, you know, when I look at the flag, all I see is the East India Tea Company's flag.
Right.
And I'm like, we have to keep bending down to the East India Tea Company's flag, which I'm glad I never did, you know, when I was a kid for religious reasons. But as an adult, even though I discarded the religion, I'm glad I never did. Because the more you learn, the more bullshit you see it all is. And yet people are more upset over Roseanne losing her show than the fact those players are taking a knee. They're like modern-day slaves now, owned by, you know, all those teams are owned by rich white men that caved in to Donald Trump. And it's like, you know, you want to play, you're going to do what we tell you to do. And it doesn't matter how many of you are getting murdered by cops every single day. So what's really changed?
Well, see, let me just go with what I was thinking when you started it. The Grand Union flag is what is like, the first flag of the United States. It is a nearly identical copy. Like, from, here's the perspective: East India Company going to China, boatloads of opium, huge profits. America might want to float into that harbor and look just like another East India Company ship, because it's flying a flag that from 300 yards away looks identical. Safe harbor, get, you know, so pirates. So there's a history of opium and piracy and skull and bones and all these sort of things, right? Now I'll just fast forward that infrastructure of a small group of elite white men who have their strings on a bunch of white people, black people, people of color, however you want to go organize it, not them. They got strings on other people, and they're using it to manipulate underground black markets of selling drugs, indoctrinating communities into that lifestyle. Like, that all goes on. Basketball, football, baseball, all those major sports are part of that. Now, on one side, it's kind of disingenuous to take a guy making $20 million a year and somehow say he's a slave when he could just not show up for work, not get paid, and they're not going to come get him and put him in a cage, most likely, right? They'd probably sue him, this sort of thing, right? But I also get that if you've got something to say and you want to say it, You have the right to say it. Now, can you say that thing while you're supposed to be performing in an entertainment event? I don't know. That seems like, you're going to have to get your lawyers involved. Because football, all those sports are definitely theater. They're definitely entertainment. Those guys are entertainers. They're not really playing an honest game. Shit can be rigged. Oh, sorry for that. Shit can be, I did it twice. Things can be rigged in professional sports. How about that?
Oh.
Yes. Ever, yeah. And it's you go back to, what was it? The Chicago Black Sox. That's just the first time they got caught publicly. Every other time people just got paid off or whacked. Right. Well, so it's Rich, not like they just came out of nowhere, and it's an ongoing historical evolution of these stories.
Well, I got to thank you for joining me today. God knows you covered so much stuff, and I had a list a mile long, as you know. But I'm looking forward to our next show. So stay in touch and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Maria, for the opportunity. And to anyone listening, it's my pleasure to offer a little food for thought to what I do.
Oh.